Good evening. Welcome to our study from the book of Ecclesiastes. We will be studying from the 10th chapter of Ecclesiastes, bringing this book almost to an end. We have two more chapters after this, and the week after next, we'll be studying chapters 11 and 12. I really do appreciate all of you that have been with me since the very beginning of the study until now, and hopefully until the end. After we finish Ecclesiastes, we're going to pick up the book of Hebrews, a very interesting book, great source for us to understand the difference between the Old and the New Testament, and that Christ is a mediator of a better law, one that can save us through grace and God's mercy. But tonight we'll be looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 10. You know, it's been a quite interesting ride reading through the book of Ecclesiastes about Solomon. Solomon apparently is in his older age as he writes this these things, and you can tell that there were many times in his life as king that he felt depressed. He felt quite anxious because he was looking for the meaning of life, and he looked for that meaning everywhere under the sun. And as we have explained in the past, that whenever we limit our search under the sun, then we're going to come up short. We have to look above the sun. We have to look into heaven. We have to look to God to find the meaning of life, the meaning of anything, really. Solomon began in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 6 with this conversation. Solomon said, "You have shown great loving kindness to your servant David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have reserved for him this great loving kindness that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day." It's really interesting or ironic how Solomon began his career as a king. This is a heartfelt conversation that he was having with God, being thankful that God had been so kind, so compassionate to David, and even blessed David as being someone who was upright, a man after God's own heart. So having said these things, he now petitions God in verse 7, 1 Kings 3 and verse 7. He says, "Now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, yet I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in." He is recognizing that as a child, he doesn't possess the experience, much less the wisdom, to be able to rule an entire nation. And he understands that as a child, he is lacking in common sense, lacking in understanding, lacking in everything. You know, he makes this point in Ecclesiastes 10 that we'll look at here shortly, but he is recognizing this. Look at the humility that this man has as he is beginning his career as a king. He says in verse 8, "Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted." He recognizes that he is nothing. He is small. He is a little speck. But yet God has chosen him to be ruler, to be king over God's chosen people. In other words, God is given to his stewardship his people, the entire nation, and that is a lot of responsibility. So Solomon feels overwhelmed. He knows that on his own he can't do this. He relies on God. So verse 9, he says, "Give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of yours?" And it was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And we know the rest of the story, that God eventually gave Solomon not only wealth, physical wealth, but he also gave him a divine measure of wisdom. So in Solomon, this child, as he himself describes, as he describes himself, he is a child. He doesn't know how to go in or out. He doesn't know anything. He has no common sense. He begins very, very humble. But by the time that he is king and has experienced the wealth and experienced all the pleasures of the flesh that money can bring, that his notoriety can bring, his reputation, he then starts losing this humility. So then we begin here in chapter 10 of Ecclesiastes, seeing that Solomon recognizes, had he maintained that humility from the very beginning, had he maintained that humbleness of heart and ruled the people with wisdom as God had said, and not allowed his wisdom and not allowed the money to go to his head, he could have achieved a lot more for the people that God had left in his charge, as Solomon described them, your chosen people. But instead of achieving a lot more, Solomon led the people down a path that eventually the kingdom would split. 10 tribes would go to the north and 2 tribes would go to the south. And his son became ruler and lost everything. So Solomon, having married 1,000 women or 300 and 700 concubines and built temples to foreign gods to his wives and gone to the temple to worship those gods, Solomon has just lost everything. He still has the wisdom, but isn't using it. He still has his wealth, but is using it for his own pleasures. And now he, in his old age, has come to his senses and is explaining to us how much heartache he could have avoided had he just been humble throughout the rest of his life as king. But his foolishness overshadowed his wisdom. And this is a reference that he makes in chapter 10, verse 1, about a stink fly and the ointment. So Solomon, in his old age, the king gives us advice. And notice the advice that he gives us, that you can have all the wisdom of this world, you can have all the wealth of this world, but if you don't have God, then it's useless. If you don't have God as your main objective to please him, if your heart's not in it, then it's useless. He says in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13, the conclusion when all has been heard, when everything has been done, is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. We can't hide from God. We can't lie to God. We can't get away with any foolishness because God is going to bring it to light. Fortunately, Solomon understood this, even though at a late age, but he understood it. You know, I'm reminded when I read this passage every time of that couple in the New Testament, in Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira. You know, Solomon here says God's going to bring every act to judgment, everything that we do, whether it's wise or not, everything that is hidden in the deepest recesses of our hearts, he's going to bring it out. Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5 and the first, 7, 8 verses, decided that they wanted to sell a piece of property and that they were going to give whatever proceeds they got from that, they were going to give it to the church because there was a famine, there was a major need in the first century church. And once they sold the property, they decided that they didn't want to give that money to the church, at least not all of it. So they only gave a portion to the church. And Peter asked Ananias, did you sell your property for this price? And Ananias lied and said, yes. Peter said, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back some of the price of the land while it was in your possession, while you owned the land? It was your own. You could have done whatever you wanted it. Nobody asked you to sell it. You sold it. Why is it that you have conceived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. And as he heard these words, Ananias fell down and breathed his last, and great fear came over all who heard it. He died. Graveyard dead. His wife comes in the span of about 3 hours, and she's asked the same question, and she lies just like her husband did, and she is struck dead as well. Well, what's the point? Ananias and Sapphira demonstrated great foolishness, and that foolishness was motivated by greed. Their foolishness was motivated by lust, just like Solomon. He was motivated by greed and lust. He everything he saw, he wanted. And once he had that, he wanted more. And this is why Solomon tells us in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, that everything, when it's all said, heard, and done, What you need to remember from the very beginning of life until the end is to fear the Lord and keep his commandments. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your spouse and your children, your home, your money. Enjoy all those things. But don't enjoy it without God being in the picture. What wise words from an old man who didn't live this way. What wise words from a man that had it all and misused it all. In Psalm 14, verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And why would a fool, or why would a person say that there is no God? I mean, obviously, because he's a fool, but what would motivate a person to say that there is no God? You know, there are Christians that have this concept. Now, they don't say it, but there are Christians that live having based their hopes and their dreams on themselves, on their greed and lust, on their money, and God is not first in their lives. So the fool, the atheist, would say verbally, there is no God, and believe it in his heart. Some Christians will say there is a God, but live as if there was no God or is no God. And that is foolish. This is the whole point that Solomon's going to be making in the 10th chapter. As he contrasts wisdom with folly, as he contrasts being or doing God's will and living as God would have us live versus living according to the lust of the flesh. So let's look at this first section of Ecclesiastes 10, verses 1, 2, and 3. And this section is titled, When a Fool Acts a Fool. Dead flies makes a perfumer's oil stink. So a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart directs him toward the right, but the foolish man's heart directs him toward the left. Even when the fool walks along the road, his sense is lacking, and he demonstrates to everyone that he is a fool. This last verse is quite powerful. A fool doesn't need to verbalize it that he's a fool. He won't. But just the things that he says and does will tell us that he is a fool. So this flies in the ointment business. Here Solomon has spent an entire life building a reputation, or at least this is what Solomon is talking about, of a man that has spent his entire life building a reputation, but makes one mistake, and that one mistake just destroys his entire reputation. That's a fly in the ointment here. Here is a person that has made a very expensive perfume that people would pay thousands of dollars an ounce to buy and wear it with pride. But one stink fly falls in and it ruins the whole thing. You can't even sell it at a discount then. David comes to mind. How David, as the Bible describes him, a man after God's own heart, who was a great poet and a great songwriter, who was very faithful and loyal to his friends and even to his enemy, King Saul, who did a lot of great things. But what do we often remember David for? For having committed adultery with Bathsheba and murdered her husband Uriah. Solomon understood very well, firsthand from his own father's experience, that when you pull away from God, when you want to grab on to the reins without God in the picture, it is foolishness. Because man desires to direct his own path, but the end, as Jeremiah says, is destruction. You know, what use is it to spend our entire lives trying to build a reputation, but then we act a fool and we destroy it? Proverbs 18 and verse 2 says, a fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. If we're always expressing our opinion, I mean, just read Facebook for a little bit and you'll be disgusted, or Twitter, and you'll see how many experts there are out there, you know, self-proclaimed experts on every topic. And Proverbs 18 verse 2 says, a fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. I'm reminded of a lady that had read some medical journals and had done some research on Google. And in her mind, she became an expert in medicine and you know, talked to her about whatever the doctor said. And she said, well, the doctor doesn't know. He's in cahoots with Big Pharma. He just wants to sell you pills and medication. That's what he's prescribing. What he's telling you to do is not going to work. And a good friend of mine is a doctor in Indiana. And he has a plaque on his office wall. And it says that my medical degree from Indiana University is worth more than your Google research. A fool doesn't want to listen to wisdom. A fool won't be willing to try to understand a matter. He's only interested in telling you how much he knows. And this is what we've been reading about. A fool which person's a fool just by the way they talk and the things that they do. So in the next few verses of Ecclesiastes 10, verses 4 through 7, he gives us what we call the ironies of wisdom, or the ironies of folly even. But let's read verse 4. In this section, I'm using the Living Bible, which I don't recommend too often, but this is a very simple a rendition of this text that I think helps bring about the point that Solomon is making. He says, if the boss is angry with you, don't quit. A quiet spirit will quiet his bad temper. There is another evil I have seen as I have watched the world go by, a sad situation concerning kings and rulers. For I have seen foolish men given great authority and rich men not given the rightful place of dignity. I have even seen servants riding while princesses walk like servants. Well, you know, what he means, I believe there in, what was that, verse 4? Verse 4, if the ruler's temper rises against you, do not abandon your position because composure lays great offenses. In Spanish, there's this proverb that says that the one that gets mad loses. And you think about the last time that you got in a terrible argument with whomever. If you didn't speak with calmness of spirit, you weren't able to speak with wisdom. If you spoke with a hot head, angry, then you said things that were not wise and made the situation worse. So Solomon here is telling us, if your employer or your king is yelling at you, he's flown off the handle, and is just berating you, it's not going to help if you respond in kind. I've heard of people that their boss comes in and is angry that day. Somebody kicked his cat that morning, and he's just angry and mistreating his employees. And then somebody says, well, you know what? I don't need this, and quits and walks out. Just in that heat of the moment, just left his job without thinking about the mortgage, the insurance, food, or all of the other expenses he has. And then he wishes that he hadn't acted that way. Solomon is saying, don't lose your cool. As a matter of fact, respond with wisdom. If you're going to say anything, be calm about it, because a sensible response that is calm can help in controlling or in cooling down the situation. The same thing applies in a marriage relationship. If both spouses are hot under the collar and they're angry and spouting things at each other, you're not going to accomplish anything positive. Proverbs 25 and verse 15, by forbearance, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Titus 2 and verse 9, urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in everything. to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, not pilfering, but showing all good faith so that they will adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in every respect. Now, right now, with all of this civil unrest that's going on in our country, political division, and just a whole bunch of negative things, little children getting slaughtered and shot and killed, all those terrible things. All that chaos. It's here because of sin. And the devil's having a grand old time, especially because Christians have been caught up in all of these things and are contributing to the division, are contributing to the ignorance. When we as Christians should understand that our citizenship is in heaven, not in this world, and thank God for that. That I should, you know, how do you think the church would progress, or would it progress faster if Christians that are so active on social media arguing about their political stances and a whole bunch of other things, if they would use that same energy to defend the Lord's church, to preach the gospel? Maybe we would be better off. We as Christians don't need to be involved in all of these civil protests and division, because we're not shining the light as Christians. So although Paul is talking about us as slaves, that we need to obey our masters and everything, we could also use this text to talk about employee, employer, son and father, older brother in Christ with a younger brother in Christ. The point is, notice the word argumentative. Be well-pleasing and not argumentative. Why? To adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in every respect. Proverbs 15 verse 1 gives us the advice that a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And I think that if we learn to be calm and patient and not say a word in anger, that we could accomplish much more in our relationships. Back in Ecclesiastes 10 and verses 5 and 6, Ecclesiastes 10 verses 5 and 6, Solomon talks about, you know, there's things in life that just don't make sense. For example, he calls it an evil that he's seen under the sun. You know, like an error, a mistake that goes forth from the ruler. You know, wisdom doesn't always get the acknowledgement that it deserves. Just think about the people that get the promotions or become presidents or governors or mayors. Are they the ones that have the most wisdom, or did they become, or did they get that promotion or become a political leader because of who they know? And Solomon says, you know, this is just something that confounds people and confounded him. That the wise man who could lead a country better than the rich man doesn't get recognized because he's poor. But the wealthy man, he has clout. He has power. So they put him in position and destroys a nation. Verses 8 through 11. This section, we've titled it a funny thing about foolishness. One of my favorite passages in the 10th chapter of Ecclesiastes has to do with the snake charmer, but we'll look at that here in a few moments. He who digs a pit may fall into it, and a serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits logs may be endangered by them. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. Now, this is the key phrase to help us understand this section. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. If you use a dull axe, you're going to work harder, right? If you dig a pit, if you dig a water well, if you go into a mine without having an escape plan, then you're going to fail. And this is why he says wisdom has the advantage of giving success. If the serpent bites before being charmed, there is no profit, no money to be made for the charmer. So verses 8 and 9, wisdom demands planning for the worst and the best. Jesus tells us in the New Testament the cost of discipleship, right? When he says you need to take up my cross and follow me. And then he goes in and gives a short parable. He says, it's foolish for a man to start building a house without first sitting down, making the plans and counting the cost. Because if he doesn't do that, he starts building the house and then he runs out of money and all of his neighbors, all of his friends will laugh at him and he'll become a derision. Well, Solomon is telling us wisdom will tell you that you need to plan for what can happen. The worst, he's not saying don't trust in the Lord, but he's saying don't stand in the middle of a busy intersection and expect a Mack truck not to run over you just because you trust in the Lord. No, you have to plan for the worst and the best. You know, it makes no sense. When I was a teenager and I started preaching in surrounding cities, in West Texas, a surrounding town might be 2 hours away. Dad made sure that he taught me how to change a flat tire, how to change the oil and do simple maintenance on my vehicle. And he would always say, before you make a trip, check the tires, check the oil, make sure you have enough gas, make sure you have enough money, make sure you have a blanket in your car, make sure you have, you know, anything that you might need if the vehicle breaks down. That's wise. So my first trip that I made in August in the desert of West Texas, 110 degrees or more, it was hot. I didn't check the tires. I didn't check the oil. And guess what? I didn't check how much gas I had in the tank and I ran out of gas, stranded on the side of the highway. Solomon is telling us that's what a fool would do. Someone with wisdom is going to plan for the worst and the best. That can save your life. In verse 10, when he talks about the axe, that if you use a dull axe, I mean, don't expect to make your job easier. He says, don't work hard, but work smart. Take the time to make sure that you have the right tools. Take the time to make sure that your axe is sharpened. Take the time that you have the resources that you need so that you can make a difficult task easier. And that's why he says that the wisdom is a secret to success. Proverbs 1 and verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fool despise wisdom and instruction. I think that when Solomon talks about wisdom, that word is broad enough to include common sense. And so here in Proverbs, we're told that if you are wise, you're going to want knowledge. If you're wise, you're going to respect the Lord. And that, as he says, is the beginning of knowledge, and you'll learn more. But fools, you can't tell them anything because they know everything. And they're going to reject that instruction. They're going to reject that advice, whether it be godly advice on how to save your soul and make sure you get to heaven, or how to have a successful marriage, or how to do the best you can at your job and succeed. Fools don't want to hear it. They know it all. James 1 verse 5, if any one of you lacks wisdom, what should we do? Ask God. And God will give to us generously and without reproach, but we must ask, verse 6, in faith. Now, the context of this text is if we're being persecuted, if our life as a Christian is being made difficult and you don't know how to handle a certain situation, well, ask God to help you with wisdom. But a fool will reject wisdom is what Solomon is saying. And then verse 11, if the serpent bites before being charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. I've only seen this on TV and usually in the Middle East, where there is a basket and inside there's a cobra and there's a man that has some type of a flute and he starts charming that cobra to come out of the basket and then plays with it. Well, let's just try to picture this in a circus. And the people have lined up to come in and see the snake charm this cobra. But as the people are lining up or gathering around the basket, that cobra bites somebody and they die. The show's over. But what Solomon trying to say? Remember that phrase, wisdom is the secret to success? Oh, cowboy wisdom says it's too late to lock the barn after the horse has been stolen. A person with wisdom will take precautions, will plan again for the best and the worst, will think things through and think about what can happen tomorrow. So if the serpent bites a spectator before the show starts, no one's going to watch that show. So let's make sure that we use, as Solomon is telling us, wisdom to plan. And in case you have no idea how to spot a fool, Solomon gives us seven ways to spot a fool. Let's read there in verse 12, Ecclesiastes 10, verse 12. Words from the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of his talking is folly, and the end of it is wicked madness. Yet the fool multiplies words. No man knows what will happen, and who can tell him what will come after him? The toil of a fool so wearies him that he does not even know how to go to a city. Woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad and whose princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility and whose princes eat at the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness. Through indolence, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. Furthermore, in your bedchamber, do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms, do not curse a rich man. For a bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creature will make the matter known. Quite interesting the way Solomon describes how to spot the fool in this section. First of all, in verses 12 and 13, he says you can easily spot a fool just by listening to them. They open their mouths, and they say some of the most outrageous, outlandish, exaggerated things. As a matter of fact, he says in verse 14 that another identifier of a fool is that he claims to know everything about the future, and yet Solomon says no one knows what the future holds. But the fool claims to know everything, even what's going to happen in the future. Turn on your TV just for a little bit and you know, watch some of the talking heads on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, all those news channels. And they have a line of experts telling us when the virus is going to end, when it's going to mutate, when it's going to curb. They have a line of experts telling us who's going to win the next presidential election. All these folks claim to be experts. And Solomon says, no one knows the future. Remember when Jesus was asked when in Matthew 24, 25, when will the end come? And Jesus says, of that hour, that day, no one knows, not even the Son, but the Father who is in heaven. And how many religious people have tried to place a date on when the end of the world is going to happen, and they failed. A fool will tell you, will claim that they know everything about the future. Verse 15, another identifier of a fool is someone that's just too lazy to work. I know that the scripture says that he won't even be able to find his way to the market. I don't think he's talking about someone that doesn't know the difference between north, south, east, west, or know how to read a map. The way I understand it is that he'd be too lazy to work even to go to the market. My family and I have been watching this show from AMC. It's been around for a while, but we just started watching it. It's called Duck Dynasty. If you haven't watched it, all you're missing is some simpleton humor. But there is, it's a family, and there's an uncle there. His name is Uncle Cy. And that man is an expert in everything, from hunting to he is an expert at everything. But he's too lazy to do anything. And Solomon says, that's how you can identify a foolish man. They're experts in everything. They're always talking, but they have nothing to show for it. Verses 16 and 17. You know, remember we read there in, was that 1 Kings chapter 3, where Solomon is asking God for wisdom. He says, because I am a child. And as a child, have been given an awesome responsibility of leading your chosen people. I don't know how to do that. So I need wisdom. And Solomon is saying, you know, it's sad when an inexperienced child is given too much responsibility. As a king, he will lead a nation to ruin. I don't know of a CEO or president of a company that will make a person that's come right out of college make them the CEO of a company or the manager of a company, because he has no experience. He might know a lot of book stuff, but he doesn't have the experience. And you put someone like that in charge, the probability that he's going to fail and make the company fail, the probability is high. Verse 18, read verse 18 with me. He says, through indolence, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. whenever there's some maintenance that needs to be done to the house, you should do it. Because if you don't, that one thing is going to get worse. That's the rafters leaking and the house sagging. I think that's what it's referring to. But another explanation is that another way to spot a fool is that they always have an excuse for failure. They blame circumstance. They blame society. They blame someone else for why they have failed. In verse 19, remember that one phrase there in verse 19 that says, men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. Well, we know that money's not the answer to everything, right? Jesus talks about that in the New Testament. So we know that Solomon isn't saying, he isn't affirming money is the answer for everything. What he is saying is that a fool will live in the moment, will drink and eat in the moment, not thinking about the future, not thinking about laying aside anything for the future. That's a fool. In verse 20, he goes back to the same problem that I believe Solomon has been talking about since Ecclesiastes chapter 1, that James talks about in all five chapters, that the tongue is what makes a lot of people fail. The seventh marker, the seventh identifier of a fool is a person that talks too much without thinking of the consequences. This is why in verse 20 he says, when you are in your bedchamber, don't speak evil about people in power. I mean, not even in my own house, in my own bedroom. Well, Solomon is making the point that after it comes out of our mouths, there's nothing that promises us that those words won't reach the ears of the person we've been talking about. So his point is, watch what you say. The old adage is, if you have nothing nice to say about someone, don't say anything at all. This is what Solomon is saying. A fool is someone who talks too much without thinking, lives in the moment, always has an excuse for failure. He's like an inexperienced child with too much responsibility. He's too lazy to work, claims to know everything about the future, and he opens his mouth and proves his stupidity or his foolishness. And that's how Ecclesiastes chapter 10 ends. Now, notice in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1, the bridge or how Solomon connects this thought, he says, now cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for ye will find it after many days. Now Solomon is going to turn from the foolishness of being foolish or the irony of foolishness to now how we should live with wisdom. And Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1, it could be talking about making good investment, financial, or it could be talking about sharing what we have with others and making friends, because in the time of need, we have friends that can help us. So that's that transition from Ecclesiastes 10, verse 20 to Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1. Don't live in the moment. Don't live like a fool. Live with wisdom, chapter 11, verse 1. Thank you for joining me. God bless.